Chapter 153. The Chase. Third day. The morning of the third day dawned fair and fresh, and once more the solitary nightman at the foremast head was relieved by crowds of the daylight lookouts, who dotted every mast and almost every spar. "D'ye see him?" cried Ahab. But the whale was not yet in sight. "In his infallible wake, though, but follow that wake, that's all. Helm there. Steady, as thou goest, and hast been going. What a lovely day again. Were it a new-made world, and made for a summer house to the angels, and this morning the first of its throwing open to them, a fairer day could not dawn upon that world. Here's food for thought. Had Ahab time to think, but Ahab never thinks. He only feels, feels, feels. That's tingling enough for mortal man. To think's audacity. God only has that right and privilege. Thinking is, or ought to be, a coolness and a calmness, and our poor hearts throb, and our poor brains beat too much for that. And yet, I've sometimes thought my brain was very calm, frozen calm. This old skull cracks so, like a glass in which the contents turn to ice, and shiver it. And still this hair is growing now, this moment growing, and heat must breed it. But no, it's like that sort of common grass, that will grow anywhere, between the earthy cliffs of Greenland ice or in Vesuvius lava. How the wild winds blow it, they whip it about me as the torn shreds of split sails lash the tossed ship they cling to. A vile wind that has no doubt blown near this through prison corridors and cells, and wards of hospitals, and ventilated them, and now comes blowing hither as innocent as fleeces. Out upon it. It's tainted. Were I the wind, I'd blow no more on such a wicked, miserable world. I'd crawl somewhere to a cave, and slink there. And yet, 'tis a noble and heroic thing, the wind. Whoever conquered it? In every fight it has the last and bitterest blow. Run tilting at it, and you but run through it. Ha! A coward wind that strikes stark naked men, but will not stand to receive a single blow. Even Ahab is a braver thing, a nobler thing than that. Would now the wind, but had a body, but all the things, that most exasperate and outrage mortal man, all these things are bodiless, but only bodiless as objects, not as agents. There's a most special, a most cunning, oh, a most malicious difference. And yet, I say again, and swear it now, that there's something all glorious and gracious in the wind. These warm trade winds, at least, that in the clear heavens blow straight on, in strong and steadfast, vigorous mildness, and veer not from their mark, however the baser currents of the sea may turn and tack, and mightiest Mississippis of the land swift and swerve about, uncertain where to go at last. And by the eternal poles, these same trades, that so directly blow my good ship on, these trades, or something like them, something so unchangeable, and full as strong, blow my keeled soul along. To it. Aloft there. What do you see? Nothing, sir. Nothing. And noon at hand. The doubloon goes a-begging. See the sun. Aye, it must be so. I've oversailed him. How, got the start. Aye, he's chasing me now. Not I, him, that's bad. I might have known it too. Fool. The lines, the harpoons he's towing. I have run him by last night. About. Come down, all of ye, but the regular lookouts. Man the braces. Steering as he had done, the wind had been somewhat on the Pequod's quarter, so that now being pointed in the reverse direction, the braced ship sailed hard upon the breeze as she re-churned the cream in her own white wake. Against the wind he now steers for the open jaw, murmured Starbuck to himself, as he coiled the new-hauled main brace upon the rail. God keep us, but already my bones feel damp within me, and from the inside wet my flesh. I misdoubt me, that I disobey my God in obeying him. Stand by to sway me up, cried Ahab, advancing to the hempen basket. We should meet him soon. Aye, sir, and straightway Starbuck did Ahab's bidding, and once more Ahab swung on high. A whole hour now passed, gold beaten out to ages. Time itself now held long breaths with keen suspense. But at last, some 3 points off the weather bow, a hab descried the spout again, and instantly from the three mastheads three shrieks went up, as if the tongues of fire had voiced it. Forehead to forehead I meet thee, this third time, Moby Dick. On deck there. Brace sharper up, crowder into the wind's eye. He's too far off to lower yet, Mr. Starbuck. The sails shake. Stand over that helmsman with a top maul. So, he travels fast, and I must down. But let me have one more good round look aloft here at the sea, there's time for that. An old sight, and yet somehow so young. I, and not changed a wink, since I first saw it, a boy, from the sand hills of Nantucket. The same to Noah as to me. There's a soft shower to leeward. Such lovely leewardings. They must lead somewhere to something else than common land, more palmy than the palms. Leeward. The white whale goes that way. Look to windward, then. The better if the bitterer quarter. But goodbye, goodbye, old masthead. What's this? Green? Aye, tiny mosses in these warped cracks. No such green weather stains on the hab's head. There's the difference now between man's old age and matters. But I, old mast, we both grow old together. Sound in our hulls, though, are we not, my ship? Aye, minus a leg, that's all. By heaven this dead wood has the better of my live flesh every way. I can't compare with it, and I've known some ships made of dead trees outlast the lives of men made of the most vital stuff of vital fathers. What's that he said? He should still go before me, my pilot, and yet to be seen again? But where? Will I have eyes at the bottom of the sea, supposing I descend those endless stairs? And all night I've been sailing from him, wherever he did sink to. I, like many more thou told'st direful truth as touching thyself, O Parsee, but, ahab, there thy shot fell short. Goodbye, masthead, keep a good eye upon the whale, the while I'm gone. We'll talk tomorrow, nay, tonight, when the white whale lies down there, tied by head and tail. He gave the word. And still gazing round him, was steadily lowered through the cloven blue air to the deck. In due time the boats were lowered, but as standing in his shallop's stern, Ahab just hovered upon the point of the descent, he waved to the mate, who held one of the tackle ropes on deck and bade him pause. Starbuck. Sir? For the third time my soul's ship starts upon this voyage, Starbuck. Aye, sir, thou wilt have it so. Some ships sail from their ports, and ever afterwards are missing, Starbuck. Truth, sir. Saddest truth. Some men die at ebb tide, some at low water, some at the full of the flood, and I feel now like a billow that's all one crested comb, Starbuck. I am old. Shake hands with me, man. Their hands met, their eyes fastened. Starbuck's tears the glue. Oh, my captain, noble heart, go not, go not. See, it's a brave man that weeps. How great the agony of the persuasion then. Lower away, cried Ahab, tossing the mate's arm from him. Tanned by the crew. In an instant the boat was pulling round close under the stern. The sharks, cried a voice from the low cabin window there. Oh master, my master, come back. But Ahab heard nothing, for his own voice was high lifted then, and the boat leaped on. Yet the voice spake true, for scarce had he pushed from the ship, when numbers of sharks, seemingly rising from out the dark waters beneath the hull, maliciously snapped at the blades of the oars, every time they dipped in the water, and in this way accompanied the boat with their bites. It is a thing not uncommonly happening to the whale boats in those swarming seas. The sharks at times apparently following them in the same prescient way that vultures hover over the banners of marching regiments in the east. But these were the first sharks that had been observed by the Pequod since the white whale had been first descried, and whether it was that Ahab's crew were all such tiger yellow barbarians, and therefore their flesh more must be to the senses of the sharks a matter sometimes well known to affect them. However it was, they seemed to follow that one boat without molesting the others. Heart of wrought steel, murmured Starbuck, gazing over the side, and following with his eyes the receding boat. Hadst thou yet ring boldly to that side? Lowering thy keel among ravening sharks, and followed by them, open mouthed to the chase, and this the critical third day? For when 3 days flow together in one continuous intense pursuit, be sure the first is the morning, the second the noon, and the third the evening, and the end of that thing, be that end what it may. Oh, my God! What is this that shoots through me, and leaves me so deadly calm, yet expectant, fixed at the top of a shutter? Future things swim before me, as in empty outlines and skeletons. All the past is somehow grown dim. Mary, girl, thou fadest in pale glories behind me. Boy, I seem to see, but thy eyes grown wondrous blue. Strangest problems of life seem clearing, but clouds sweep between as my journey's end coming. My legs feel faint, like his who has footed it all day. Feel thy heart, beats it yet? Stir thyself, Starbuck. Stave it off, move, move. Speak aloud. Masthead there. See ye my boy's hand on the hill? Crazed, aloft there. Keep thy keenest eye upon the boats. Mark well the whale. Ho, again. Drive off that hawk. See, he pecks, he tears the vane, pointing to the red flag flying at the main truck. Hey, he soars away with it. Where's the old man now? Seest thou that sight, O Ahab? Shudder, shudder. The boats had not gone very far, when by a signal from the mastheads, a downward pointed arm, Ahab knew that the whale had sounded. But intending to be near him at the next rising, he held on his way a little sideways from the vessel, the Betcham crew maintaining the profoundest silence, as the headbeat waves hammered and hammered against the opposing bow. Drive, drive in your nails, O ye waves! To their uttermost heads drive them in, ye but strike a thing without a lid, and no coffin, and no hearse can be mine, and hemp only can kill me. Ha! Ha! Suddenly the waters around them slowly swelled in broad circles, then quickly upheaved, as if sideways sliding from a submerged berg of ice, swiftly rising to the surface. A low rumbling sound was heard, a subterraneous hum, and then all held their breaths, as bedraggled with trailing ropes, and harpoons, and lances, a vast form shot lengthwise, but obliquely from the sea. Shrouded in a thin drooping veil of mist, it hovered for a moment in the rainbowed air, and then fell swamping back into the deep. Crushed 30 feet upwards, the waters flashed for an instant like heaps of fountains, then brokenly sank in a shower of flakes, leaving the circling surface creamed like new milk round the marble trunk of the whale. Give way! Cried Ahab to the oarsman, and the boat started forward to the attack. But maddened by yesterday's fresh irons that corroded in him, Moby Dick seemed combinedly possessed by all the angels that fell from heaven. The wide tears of welded tendons overspreading his broad white forehead, beneath the transparent skin, looked knitted together, as head-on, he came churning his tail among the boats, and once more flailed them apart, spilling out the irons and lances from the two mates' boats, and dashing in one side of the upper part of their bows, but leaving the abs almost without a scar. While Dagoo and Queequeg were stopping the strained planks, and as the whale swimming out from them, turned, and showed one entire flank as he shot by them again, at that moment a quick cry went up, lashed round and round to the fish's back, pinioned in the turns upon turns in which, during the past night, the whale had reeled the involutions of the lines around him. The half-torn body of the Parsee was seen, his sable raiment frayed to shreds, his distended eyes turned full upon old Ahab. The harpoon dropped from his hand. Befooled, befooled! Drawing in a long lean breath, ye, Parsee, I see ye again. Aye, and thou goest before, and this then is the hearse that thou didst promise. but I hold thee to the last letter of thy word. Where is the second curse? Away, mates, to the ship. Those boats are useless now. Repair them if ye can in time, and return to me. If not, Ahab is enough to die down. Men, the first thing that but offers to jump from this boat I stand in, that thing I harpoon. Ye are not other men, but my arms and my legs, and so obey me. Where's the whale? Gone down again? But he looked too nigh the boat, for as if bent upon escaping with the corpse he bore, and as if the particular place of the last encounter had been but a stage in his leeward voyage, Moby Dick was now again steadily swimming forward, and had almost passed the ship, which thus far had been sailing in the contrary direction to him, though for the present her headway had been stopped. He seemed swimming with his utmost velocity, and now only intent upon pursuing his own straight path in the sea. Oh! Ahab, cried Starbuck, not too late is it, even now, the third day, to desist. See! Moby Dick seeks thee not. It is thou, that madly seekest him. Setting sail to the rising wind, the lonely boat was swiftly impelled to leeward, by both oars and canvas. And at last when Ahab was sliding by the vessel, so near as plainly, to distinguish Starbuck's face as he leaned over the rail, he hailed him to turn the vessel about, and follow him, not too swiftly, at a judicious interval. Glancing upwards, he saw Tishtego, Queequeg, and Daggoo, eagerly mounting to the three mastheads, while the oarsmen were rocking in the two staved boats which had but just been hoisted to the side, and were busily at work in repairing them. One after the other, through the portholes, as he sped, he also caught flying glimpses of Stubb and Flask, busying themselves on deck among bundles of new irons and lances. As he saw all this, as he heard the hammers in the broken boats, far other hammers seemed driving a nail into his heart. But he rallied. And now marking that the vainer flag was gone from the main masthead, he shouted to Tishtego, who had just gained that perch, to descend again for another flag, and a hammer and nails, and so nail it to the mast. Whether fagged by the 3 days' running chase, and the resistance to his swimming in the knotted hamper he bore, or whether it was some latent deceitfulness and malice in him. Whichever was true, the white whale's way now began to abate, as it seemed, from the boat so rapidly nearing him once more, though indeed the whale's last start had not been so long a one as before. And still as Ahab glided over the waves the unpitying sharks accompanied him, and so pertinaciously stuck to the boat, and so continually bit at the plying oars, that the blades became jagged and crunched, and left small splinters in the sea, at almost every dip. Heed them not. Those teeth but give new rowlocks to your oars. Pull on. 'Tis the better rest, the shark's jaw than the yielding water. But at every bite, sir, the thin blades grow smaller and smaller. They will last long enough. Pull on. But who can tell, he muttered, either these sharks swim to feast on the whaler on the Ahab. But pull on. Aye, all alive, now we near him. The helm. Take the helm, let me pass, and so saying two of the oarsmen, helped him forward to the bows of the still flying boat. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.